Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
What's good, what's y'all?
Schwebzy.
Oh.
Just because you do it, Schwebzy, just because you do it for 1 week does not mean you get to do it forever, okay? That was a one-time thing. Let's just make that clear. I'm the host, right?
Sorry, the power has gone to my head. I did everything for 1 week. I had it all.
Had it all. And now you have nothing. Nothing is
yours. I could have had it all, rolling in the deep. You know how it goes.
Oh, no. Okay, we did it. Okay, we've come full circle at this point. All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of In the Deep, Deep League-focused fantasy baseball podcast, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jordan White, back here again this week. Sorry about the technical issues last week. I'm joined here once again by my good friend and co-host, Christopher Schwebzy Weber. Schwebzy, thank you so much for covering for me last week. I appreciate it. How was it talking to yourself for a half an hour?
It was like the rest of my time. Talking to you is my break from just talking to myself.
I'm sorry that I couldn't give you that last week, but we're back again, together again this week. And you're actually back up in New Jersey.
Oh yeah. This episode is being recorded from my mother-in-law's basement. Like most other podcasts, I believe.
Specifically what table though? What table are you at right now?
This is my wife's childhood crafting table.
So this is probably like Schwibzy's wife is already very small. This is probably like the most baby sized table imaginable, I can only assume.
As a large 6 foot three person, I could barely get my knees under this thing.
So hopefully you can't hear Schwibzy's knees knocking against the bottom of the table as we record. Hopefully you can stay comfortable during the recording. But yeah, thank you all so much for joining us once again for another episode. If you want to follow us on our social media, you can follow us at our shared podcast account. That's at In the Deep PL on Twitter. You can follow myself at Bunt Singles or Schwebzy at Schwebzy. That's Schwebzy. Schwebzy, I'm going to send it to you right away here to talk about someone that I get to watch pitch actually live this past week because I don't work in the middle of the weeks anymore. Tyler Wells. Tell us all about Tyler Wells. You went deep on him here.
Sure did. Love a deep Wells. I've mentioned it's where the best water's from. I've mentioned Tyler Wells on the podcast before. I talked about him in the off season with some mild excitement because he put up really good underlying numbers as a reliever last year, and we heard that the Orioles had decided to stretch him out to be a starter. And you know, we don't always see pitchers move in that direction from the rotation, from the bullpen to the rotation, but you know, it's worked before, so it's, you know, it was intriguing. Before talking about Wells himself, I want to give some background on the Orioles and their ballpark and their organization status. So listeners at home, in the car, wherever you are, if you had to guess where Orioles starting pitchers ranked in ERA, like, what would you guess? Knowing that their pitchers are like Spencer Watkins and Bruce Zimmerman and Tyler Wells and Kyle Bradish's first three career starts. Jordan, where would you guess that the Orioles ranked in ERA for rotations?
There's been some pretty bad ones this year. Honestly, I would say like,
I don't know why I'm throwing this to you, like, knowing that, like, you're the best guesser in the world.
I'm going to say 20th. That's just, I'm guessing like right at the precipice between like bottom third and middle third.
I have never had you guess something and you not been close. They're 17th, sandwiched between Toronto and Miami, two pretty good rotations. But the interesting
Miami
thing
underperformed.
Here, they have. And Toronto, Toronto throws out Kikuchi every 5 days. They've thrown out Ross Stripling a bit. So, you know, it's not the...
offsets all the gains they get from Gausman, yeah.
Right. So, the reason I bring this up is because I also want to further ask, what do you think they rank in home ERA?
Home ERA? I don't even know what the park factors are. Are they good? Are they bad with the new wall and everything like that?
Well,
I would
exactly.
guess, like, home ERA? Let's say, would you talk about them if they were bad? Would you bring this up if it was bad and then talk about Tyler Wells? So probably not. I'm going to say top third. I'm going to say like eighth.
They're second.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's even better than I thought it was.
Right. So the formerly friendly batter confines of Camden Yards are now fully a pitcher's park. It's wild, the dramatic change that has occurred. The combination of the new baseball, the moved back left center field fence. Not only did they move the left center field fence back, but they also added a wall, like a huge, tall wall. It's like, what is it, like 15 feet high? It's a large wall.
Yeah.
We've already seen that wall rob many a home run from batters like Ryan Mountcastle and, like Anthony Santander on that team. And aside from park factors, the organization in general, the Orioles player development team has gone from kind of a joke. You know, this was the team that, you know, ruined Brian Matthews and ruined or tried to ruin Kevin Gausman, among others. Now, I recently read a 3-part interview that The Athletic did with their director of player development, Matt Blood. And, you know, organizations are only going to say so much in an interview, but he was saying all the right things regarding, you know, hiring the right kind of talent, utilizing technology to advance their player development. And honestly, I really liked what he was saying. And it's shown both on the field for the major league team and in the farm system, where last year the Orioles had the number one farm system by, you know, according to some outlets. So we've got an environment that is ripe for under the radar pitching performances. You know, we've already seen Bruce Zimmerman. He's put up like a sub-3 ERA this year. Same thing for Spencer Watkins. So, but we're not here to talk about those guys. We're here to talk about Tyler Wells. Tyler Wells has been on a roll. In his first start of the year against Tampa Bay, he gave up 4 earned runs and only got 5 outs. Not good. Since then, 5 starts, 22.1 innings, and a 2.42 ERA, with 2 of those starts coming against the En Fuego New York Yankees. Now, that's good.
That's pretty good.
One of those starts was at Oakland, and 3 of those starts were at home. And that's kind of what I'm here to talk about, is that Orioles starters and Orioles starters in general, I really, really need to redo my own internal gut calculations every time I see Camden Yards on the schedule and Oriole pitchers pitching at home. Like, in my head, those are not good streams. Those are good streams now. Those are very good streams now. And Tyler Wells in particular is a potentially fantastic streamer for you shallow league people, and a potential keeper quality pitcher for deeper leagues. I have him in several very deep keeper leagues myself. So he's had a pretty friendly schedule so far, like I mentioned. But the ratios have been really good. He's taken full advantage of it. And he's been built up to 75 pitches, suggesting that there's potential for even more length here. Phrasing. He's even with those 75 pitches, he's gotten up to 6 innings pitched already. So, I mean, you know, if he's this efficient with 75 pitches, you know, who's to say how deep he can go into games? We might get Lorenzen-style low strikeout, deep inning kind of guy. Unfortunately, I mentioned earlier that I was really excited because of Tyler Wells' pitches and his peripherals as a reliever. His stuff hasn't really survived the transition from the bullpen to the rotation, which, you know, you'd expect. You expect a tick down in stuff. He's lost a tick and a half of velocity on his fastball. His strikeouts are down all the way from 29% to 17.3%, which is, that's huge. That's really bad.
Yeah, not encouraging.
The good news is that he didn't walk anybody when he was a reliever. He doesn't walk anybody now that he's a starter. And that's always a good base to start from, is not walking people. Free bases are death for starters.
He's actually walking fewer people now that he's a starter than he did last year as a reliever, which is good.
Yes. For, you know, on a percentage basis.
Yes.
Overall, I want to believe he still has that bat missing talent. Like, in my head right now, I mentioned the name earlier. I feel like he's kind of like Michael Lorenzen. Like a low strikeout, strong streamer, really good, like a great stream against bad offenses. And, mm-hmm. you know, except, you know, he has the benefit of maybe the new best pitcher's park in baseball, possibly. So I think he's a very...
There. Oh, sorry, my bad.
No, sure. So on top of what I already talked about, there's been a significant pitch mix change with his transition to the rotation. He's throwing his fastball almost 20% less than last year. He's only throwing his fastball 38.1% of the time. He's making up for those lost fastballs with more changeups and curveballs, two mostly good results. Both the changeup and the curveball are putting up CSWs over 32%, which are good numbers. I actually wonder, like, I should have asked you to pull these numbers. If he's putting up such strong CSW numbers, his weighted earned strikes probably stinks because he's not getting those strikes in two strike counts.
It would definitely drop a little bit. He would still be, I think, he would still have a respectable weighted earned strike rate. Yeah, because he's not getting the Ks, he's going to have a little bit lower than what his it's going to be lower than what his actual CSW is, his weighted earned strike rate, but it would still rank pretty highly, I would think, for those two pitches specifically.
Yeah. So I mentioned that he was using his changeup more. That changeup is a weapon. I've already made Jordan play the guessing game several times already today, and I had him do this earlier with Tyler Wells' changeup as well.
Once again, I was very close.
Incredibly close. You're so good at this. Tyler Wells' changeup allows hard contact 4.8% of the time. That is obscenely low. That's so incredibly low. I want to get context. Like, that's such a low number that I actually want to get the context for it. The average MLB changeup for a starting pitcher allows hard contact 24% of the time. So he's he's a full 20%. It's a money pitch by Nick's definition. It gets a better than 40% O swing and zone percentage, and it gets a better than 15% swinging strike rate. So yeah, mm-hmm. this is firmly in money pitch territory. So you have to imagine that with a four-seamer that plays and two good, passable to good breaking pitches, that there's potential here for, you know, more than we've seen so far, which I feel like what we've got here is like a mid to high level Toby. And I think there's potential for more here, especially if maybe I don't know if it's maybe using the changeup in two strike counts more, you know, try to get more swinging strikes than balls put into play. But I like what I see here. And in general, my research on Tyler Wells has made me realize that I really need to be looking at, and you know, my advice to the listeners is that we all need to be looking at Baltimore pitchers differently than we did a year ago. They're much stronger streams, and their environment is much more pitcher-friendly than it used to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something that I do want to kind of throw cold water on in terms of Tyler Wells. I will say I love him. I do love him. I got to watch him go up against the Royals earlier this week, where he got his first win of the season. And I mean, he got through six innings on like what 75 pitches, you said, something like that.
Yeah.
It was like a very, very low pitch count. Those pitch counts are going to remain low because he was a bullpen arm last year. He only threw like 57 innings in 2021. So I think he's probably going to cap out at like between like 110 to 120 innings is probably where he's going to sit. So I think that, especially also with like, because it's a 6-man rotation currently in Baltimore, they're going to be limiting how many innings he actually gets to throw or how many pitches he gets to throw just to make sure that he's not hurting himself. That said, yes, the strikeouts have gone down. I don't think that they're going to be there necessarily like they were when he was a reliever, but that changeup and that curveball are both very, very good. And even if they're not getting the strikeouts, they're inducing so much weak contact. That changeup is gross. It is really, really good. Watching it live, it is a disgusting changeup. And it's, I mean, I feel like I used to be like a big slider guy. I love sliders. That was my favorite pitch to watch.
Love tiny sandwiches.
I am much more now. Oh yeah, of course. Mwah, delicious. Love it. But like, I've really come to appreciate splitters and split changes and changeups a lot more as pitches. Because while they aren't often like the best strikeout pitches, the best K pitches, they are incredibly, incredibly useful in inducing that weak contact and still providing a lot of value to pitchers. And yeah, Tyler Wells has a really, really great one. It's just so pretty. I think there was a few that I wanted to post in the Nasty Pitches channel on the PL Discord during that start, and I didn't want to spam like crazy, so I just posted one, what I thought was the best one. But yeah, no, I love Tyler Wells, and I think that, like Schwabzy said, like in particular instances, like a lot of times when he's going to be pitching at home, I think he's well worth the stream.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. It's funny, I picked him up at the start of the year in a couple of deeper leagues. And then dropped him after the Tampa start, and then like immediate regret after that.
Yeah,
because after the Tampa start, it was a couple of abbreviated starts. It wasn't until like his fourth and fifth starts where he really got rolling.
Yeah, I mean, like even the game he pitched 5 innings against the Yankees on the 27th of April, and only gave up 3 hits, 2 earned runs, no walks. He hasn't walked a batter since his second game of the year. He's had 4 straight games with no walks.
And like for those of you who are listening to this on Saturday,
yes.
for context, we are recording this on Thursday night. But
I meant to say that at the top of the episode, I forgot about it because we were too busy trying to figure out the bit that we were going to do at the beginning.
we care more about bits than content. It is what it is. So this will get posted on Saturday at our normal time. And when you listen to this on, in theory on Saturday, go out and pick up Tyler Wells for a Sunday stream because he gets Detroit at home. And that is a struggling offense in, like I mentioned, a very friendly pitcher environment. So that is the official In the Deep endorsed streamer of Sunday. Which is a thing we don't do.
Streaming, I'm streaming on Sunday morning. Anyways, I had to get that out. I'm sorry.
Great, we have a new bit for that. That'll be weekly, and I'm gonna need you to sing that every week.
Absolutely not. We're just gonna cut that out of this episode, and we're gonna replay it. I'm never doing that again. I already feel the impairment. I'm not listening back to this episode. I'm just going to edit and just not listen to this part. So I don't.
You mean like I refuse to listen to last week's episode because I don't want to hear myself talk to myself for 30 minutes?
Correct. Exactly right. It's so cringe for people that don't do podcasts, and for me, I edit the podcast every week. It is so cringe listening to your own voice sometimes. Most of the time, I can get past it, but like I'm going to absolutely skip over that part where I just sang.
It's like the complete opposite of when Ellen Adair came onto the pod and sang.
Oh yeah, because Ellen can actually sing. As much as they won't admit it, Ellen is a very, very good singer. But yes. Gosh, where were we? Wait, was that it? Did you have anything else on Tyler Wells? I forgot what we were talking about because I got too busy in the bit and then, whatever.
No, you have a hitter you want to talk about.
I do. And I was actually genuinely surprised that you didn't claim this person when we started doing our notes like yesterday, today.
It's tough with minor leaguers. We don't have the data.
It is really hard. But you also talked about the Diamondbacks last week, so I figured True. That you would be like kind of in on this a little bit. And this is a very, very early adoption thing. I'm going to talk about Alec Thomas. So again, we are not the most knowledgeable people about prospects. If you want that, listen to On the Farm with Lamar Gibson. Fantastic, super smart. Be sure to check that podcast out. But there was a couple things that intrigued me about Thomas. So I was a little bit surprised that he hasn't been picked up more aggressively, as he's a really, really well-regarded prospect. He's only 15% rostered between ESPN and Yahoo leagues right now. But I think that maybe the Diamondbacks' reputation as a less than stellar offense has an adverse effect on any prospects that get called up for that team. So that's kind of where I would assume that came from. And his sample size in the majors so far is incredibly small. He's had 13 plate appearances, so we don't have a lot to draw from. And he's also been batting near the bottom of the order, so there's kind of some downsides here in that regard. But he already has one home run in his first four games and has already established himself as the main option in center field right now, or at least until Corbin Carroll gets called up too. And that includes three starts against right-handed pitchers and one against a left-handed pitcher, so splits don't seem to matter as much here from what I can gather. And of course, because it's only 13 plate appearances so far in the majors, this is a huge sample size warning, but Thomas has a 70% hard hit rate so far. So hitting 7 out of his 10 balls hard is pretty good. I know that it's very likely not going to last, but that is a really, really encouraging development from him, especially someone who hasn't had any real major league action before. His max EV so far is 107.8, and I think that is obviously very good, but I don't think his success is going to be from him hitting the ball super hard. It's going to be from him hitting the ball decently hard really, really often, right? That's going to be the thing where he gets his success. While he does have yet to draw a walk in a major league at bat, the plate discipline should never be of any concern because he started the year in AAA this year with an 11.2% walk rate while only striking out 13.8% of the time. Like, the hit tool is there, the plate discipline is there. It's all really, really good. It's much better than his age suggests. And I think that obviously with a really consistent record of having high walk rates in the minors, the walks are going to come. So I think he's going to be especially valuable for folks who are in redraft leagues that value on base percentage. So those folks specifically, this is more so for you. I think that the on base skills will also allow him to use his speed, which he's a 60 grade speed threat, according to most outlets. That will help him nab a few stolen bases. He's not going to get a ton. He's never been like a huge stolen base guy in the minors, but he's fast enough to get the ones that he needs to get. As far as the other counting stats go, he has managed to rack up 4 runs and 3 RBIs in just 4 games so far, which is very excellent considering you're hitting 8 or 9 in a subpar order in your first few glimpses of MLB action, although the Diamondbacks have been better as of late.
I don't think he stays in that lineup spot for long, honestly.
You don't think so?
I think, like, if he keeps doing what he's doing, I think he gets bumped up pretty quickly. There's not there are so few, like, proven veterans in that lineup. You know, it's not like Houston and Kyle Tucker where there's, like, you know, 5 or 6 established veterans in front of him ahead of him in the order. You know, it's Christian Walker and Paven Smith.
Well, yeah, like 1 and 2 right now, it's like leading off is either Dalton Varsho or Cooper Hummel a lot of times based on left or right-handed split, if I'm looking at it right. And then you have Paven Smith at 2 a lot of the time. You have, obviously, like Josh Rojas.
Peralta.
At 3. Peralta is up there. You got Christian Walker. And then you have, obviously, like Ketel Marte is going to be up there as well occasionally.
Like, if he hits, I can see him hitting, like, second or sixth.
Yeah, I mean, he's gonna climb the order eventually, I think. I think he is very much... I less so see him hitting sixth. I will say that. I think that if he's going to be hitting, he's going to be hitting, like, one or two, or he's going to be hitting, like, near the very bottom of the order, because he's, like, very prototypical table setter type player. Where, like, he's not completely slapdick where he's just going to be getting some like lazy singles here and there. Like, he can still hit the ball hard. It's just that he's not like a big power bat. He's going to be like a 15 home run guy tops, I would think. 15-20 maybe if he unlocks more power.
Yeah.
But I think that there is a chance if someone else gets caught in a slump that he could climb that order as well. Like, he could hit one or two in that order if he performs well enough. So,
or if the team-wide season-long slump continues.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, they have broken out of it a little bit. You're right about that. So for you prospect hounds out there, my two personal favorite sources for prospect lists are Fangraphs and Prospects Live. And Fangraphs had Alec Thomas as the number 24 prospect, while Prospects Live had him at, I think it was 36? 34. Funny thing, in their blurb about him, Fangraphs called him Lilliputian, which means small, slight. The man is 5'11".
That isn't exactly a short king. That's taller than me, to be fair.
Like, I don't, who are these giants that are, scouting prospects for Fangraphs?
Just a bunch of guys who lie about their height on their dating profiles. That's who. That's right. That's right. Fangraphs.
Just a bunch of short kings are going to start writing angry letters to. Oh God, it's not Kylie anymore. Kylie's over at ESPN now. Oh, I'm blanking on who the prospect person is at Fangraphs.
I have completely forgotten as well. But, yes, so, Alec Thomas, someone that I am looking to nab in a few leagues, pretty much has the center field spot locked down. And like I said, eventually, when Corbin Carroll gets called up, he will likely shift over to left field because he doesn't have a really good arm. But I think he's still going to be able to stick in a decent lineup spot as long as he continue producing. And I think there does need to be a little bit of, like, lagging behind or failure on behalf of the people who are currently at the top of that lineup for him to get his chance. But I mean, why not give the young kids some chances? I mean, you look at Julio. This is not an apples to apples comparison, but obviously Julio Rodriguez now hitting third fairly often for the Seattle lineup. Like, put these guys in like really key spots. Why not?
I like it. I'm on the record here as saying that I think that lineup is going to perform much better than it has. And, you know, it has recently. And I think that could wind up being a really good, productive spot for Thomas.
He could score a lot of runs. He's not going to be a big RBI guy, probably ever, I would say. But the runs are always going to be there. So,
I don't know. I feel like later in the order, he could be like a Jeff McNeil-esque hitter. You know?
Stop. Nope. Don't like it. And on that note, let's go to our quick ad break here.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right, we're back. Oh, God. All right, Schwabzy, you were heavy on the pitchers this week. I took a couple of hitters, so let's lead you off here with another pitcher. Let's talk about Dane Dunning real quick.
Yeah, you know, I was looking through like the sub 20% hitters. I was underwhelmed this week. I was whelmed. I don't know. There were a lot of pitches I found intriguing, though. You know, like Wells and, yeah, like you said, Dane Dunning. You might remember Dane Dunning from last week when I said I was interested in him, but only if the schedule lined up in such a way that he got to avoid the Yankees. Well, he didn't avoid the Yankees. He pitched against the Yankees, and he dominated the Yankees. He went and threw six innings of one-run ball against them with five strikeouts and five base runners allowed, which is, you know, pretty good, especially considering they are in the midst of an absolutely stellar run as a team and as an offense. And that start against the Yankees was after Dunning shoved against Atlanta. And that Atlanta start was after Dane Dunning shoved against Houston, who just finished absolutely dismantling Minnesota. That's a brutal stretch of opposition. And Dane Dunning just carved right through these tough, tough lineups. In those three starts, he went 19.1 innings and had a 1.86 ERA in those starts. And in those 19 innings, he got 17 strikeouts, only allowed 15 base runners. It's been a legitimately impressive stretch of performances. And the question for us is now, how legitimate is it? And how should we proceed? Coming into this season, I think Dunning's defining trait, you know, other than being the prize of the Lance Lynn deal, is probably his sinker. It was a pitch that he threw 52% of the time last year, and it helped him to a 54% ground ball rate, which, had he qualified for the ERA title, would have put him just ahead of Sandy Alcantara for fourth among starters. And that's cool for getting outs, but not so good for the strikeouts that we love so much in fantasy. So how is he getting strikeouts? By getting a 30%+ whiff percentage on both his slider and his changeup. And that'll play, generally. But also, he never, ever threw those pitches in the strike zone. His slider, he only threw in the zone 28.5% of the time, which is really, really low. And that led to what was an effective but inefficient pitch.
I'm sorry. I have to stop the podcast because Schwabzy was doing the most New Jersey thing imaginable, which is like the, how do I describe this?
I'm doing the Rizzo Gallo Italian hands thing right now. I'm completely
as
subconsciously.
Talking, just, oh, that was beautiful. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to cut you off. Continue.
But yeah, so he barely threw his breakers in the zone. It's like his sinker was his called strike pitch, and then the other pitches were his whiff pitches. And, you know, he got a shade under a strikeout per inning, which is, you know, fine. But it's just, I don't think that would wind up being a sustainable approach. Like, the changeup was promising. It was a very clear third option. He only used it like 13% of the time, so he was basically just sinker slider. And like I said, he never threw the slider in the zone. That feels like something that teams would have caught on to quickly, and, you know, been a bit like good teams would have pounced on that, or you know, the opposite, never pounced on the slider. And you know, he put up a pretty, like, he had good starts last year, but overall it was a 4.51 ERA last year, which is, you know, not great. This year, however, we're seeing some really interesting things, because on the surface, he's got nearly identical strikeout numbers, walk numbers, home run numbers, ground ball numbers. So, like, the surface stats look basically unchanged, and yet we've got a 1.5 drop in ERA, and all of his ERA predictors, like XERA, FIP, XFIP, Sierra, everything, it's down at least half a run from last year. And we know ground ballers can be finicky, like, when it comes to ERA predictors. Like, good ground ballers can regularly outperform their ERA estimators. You know, thinking of like Marcus Stroman off the top of my head. So what's going on with him? There have been some pretty major changes to his pitch mix, and it's led to some mixed results. He's cut his sinker usage by nearly 15%, and this was a pitch that he threw 52% of the time last year. He's nixed his curveball entirely. A pitch, I didn't mention his curveball earlier because he only threw it 5% of the time, and it was just a show me pitch. So that leaves, you know, 20% of a repertoire missing, and he's made up for that by throwing his slider and changeup about 10% more each. And I wish this was one of those situations where a player made a pitch mix change and it paid immediate dividends, but unfortunately it hasn't really worked out that way. His slider has gotten more effective the less he's used it, and his breakers have both been slightly less effective, and the trade-off has just left his peripherals in like almost the exact same place, which is weird. You don't often see like all of the levers change and then the results be the same. It's weird.
Yeah.
It's really easy to look at those unchanged surface numbers and then look at his BABIP, which is kind of low at the moment, and then go, oh yeah, his ERA is just a result of a lower BABIP. That's all. I don't think it's that simple. There are some encouraging changes from last year to this year. He's throwing his slider in the zone more often, which is good because he never threw it in the zone last year. And he's throwing his sinker in the zone. This is wild. Jordan was really surprised when I told him this earlier. He's throwing his sinker in the zone 8% less often this year, from about 58% to about 50%. But his called strike rate is 4% higher. And this will require, yeah, it is weird. But it's a good weird. Like, it'll require a little bit more digging, a little bit more research, but seeing this makes me think that he's just locating it better. And I think heat maps, like on the surface, would support that, because last year he basically threw his sinker to one spot. He's a righty, and he just threw it to like the outside edge. Now he's spotting it inside, outside, both corners, low, and I have to believe that that is what is leading to these additional called strikes. He's game planning different, and he's executing that game plan. So overall, you know, I asked the question before, what do we do with this information? Personally, I'm a dingus, and I just cut him in my AL only league, and I have immediate regret, because I wish I still had him on my team in my AL only league after doing this research. When you have he's still getting the same like 52-53% ground ball rate while striking out a guy per inning, locating his sinker well, and getting, you know, he's still throwing all three of his main pitches to good locations. I'm in on this as long, like, so I think Nick classified this as a Vargas rule, which in mm-hmm. In pitcher list parlance means it's probably not going to last, but we're going to ride it until the wheels fall off.
Yep. 100%.
But Nick says these things in the context of standard leagues, which is not what we're talking about. I think Dane Dunning is like a season long hold for deeper leagues, but he's probably the kind of guy that you start or don't start depending on matchups. But you know, if you were to listen to me, then you probably wouldn't have started him against the Yankees and Houston, and you would have missed those good starts. So looking at his profile, I don't see that kind of ceiling where like he'll consistently beat good offenses like he has been doing. I'd say like that hints at a Vargas rule. I don't know. It's like a good team Vargas rule. But I would absolutely mm-hmm. keep running him out there once the schedule gets better. You know? Am I making sense? I don't know.
You are. And I think we talked about this too, is like, you want to talk about Dane Dunning and you weren't sure if you had like a really like neat way to wrap him up and like give like super like a clear message of like what he is. And I think that's okay. Right. It's like we found a lot of interesting stuff when we're not sure what to make of it. So at least we can throw that out there so other folks can make their own decisions on it, too, because we're not going to like spoon feed you every single thing every single week and like tell you exactly who to and who not to pick up just to make your own decisions on this. But I think Schwebzy pointed out a ton of really interesting stuff that Dane Dunning has been doing this year, different. And it seems to be working in its own way.
Yeah, like I hate to not give actionable information. Mm-hmm. So his upcoming schedule shows that he's going to be, well, actually, that's for Friday, so that's tomorrow, and that's not going to be useful. So he's starting the day after we record this and the day before you're listening to this, so that's weird. But hopefully when you listen to this, he will be coming off of a strong start against Boston and their struggling offense. But whatever he does in that Boston start, I would be recommending to add Dunning, but then keep him on your bench for the upcoming Wednesday matchup against the Angels, who continue to be like just a stellar offense. I am confident in Dunning. I'm not top three offense streamer confident in Dunning.
I think that's a fair assessment. That's probably where I'm at with him too. I gotta see if he's available in any of my auto new leagues, actually, now that I'm thinking about this, because he seems like he could be an interesting ad there. Yeah, all right.
I'm just mad that like this whole episode I've been trying to figure out, like when I was talking about Tyler Wells, I was trying to figure out how to somehow say like Wells, and like the whole time we were talking about Dane Dunning, I was trying to find it like a dun dun dun, and I couldn't find anything.
Personally, I'm pleased that you couldn't find anything.
I know, and that just makes me feel worse.
Sorry, you'll get one out eventually. I mean, we have another very punny last name coming up with the person that I'm going to talk about, so you can probably come up with something decent for this one. I'm going to talk about someone that we've talked about multiple times on this podcast before, and that's Darren Ruff, currently 6% roster between ESPN and Yahoo leagues. I don't think we ever actually covered him at length this year. Maybe in the preseason we did at one point. I can't remember if we talked about him on our I think we talked about him during our corner infield preview. We might not have highlighted him heavily, but we probably covered him during our corner infield preview.
Yeah, he was one of my corner infield preseason guys.
Yeah, and so he struggled to start the year. That was no mystery to anyone. But even through all of that, I remember Schwebzy and I had brought him up a couple times, and we had not lost confidence in him as someone to target if you need a corner infielder in a deeper league. And if you have the same disposition towards Darren Ruff as we do, you would have been rewarded by picking him up, because now he's in the midst of a 7-game hitting streak. He's hit safely in 10 of his last 11. And during this time, he's raised his average from 145 all the way to 222. That's a 77-point jump. He looks great over the past few weeks. The power he displayed last year has been largely absent, which is unfortunate, aside from like a solo homer. It was his first home run of the year this past Saturday. And the counting stats do leave a little bit to be desired overall, but he's still absolutely worth a look. Schwebzy, quick little trivia question. He did something during his little 10 out of 11 game hitting seven game streak, that I thought was hilarious and surprising because it's Darren Ruff.
Stole two bases.
Hey, you didn't even let me finish.
I have Darren Ruff. Is that the right answer?
Yeah, it is.
I have Darren Ruff on several teams. I know.
Oh, okay, good. Well, I mean, that made me feel that I thought that was going to be way cooler, but I guess Schwebzy just had to look even cooler by having Darren Ruff on all of his teams. But yeah, no, Darren Ruff stole bases, not just stole two bases. He stole a base in back-to-back games, both against the Washington Nationals, which is hilarious. This is not a guy who steals bases, but if you were sharp enough, like Schwebzy, to grab him and have him in your lineup,
you were the recipient of a pleasant little surprise, which is really, really nice.
Well, we've established that I'm a stolen base savant, apparently.
That is true. This is, I don't know if you all know this. This is Christopher Schwebsey Weber, a.k.a. stolen base leader in TGFBI by like five. Like the next closest person is like five behind you.
Somehow I drafted all the stolen bases.
It is
and that
nuts.
Wild it's Tatis is on my IL. I don't know how that happened.
You're just going to bury everyone by the time he comes back. It's going to be stupid.
I'm going to get a trophy made up for stolen base champion of TGFBI.
Got to win something. Because you know both of us aren't winning anything else. Bring some hardware home for us, Schwebsey. Please, just do that. Literally, bring it, buy it, bring it home. Ruff's newfound burner speed aside, the on-base skills have been there since he returned from the KBO in 2020, and they're unquestionable. He's got a 13.9% walk rate and a 370 OBP since he came back from Korea. He's been fantastic at getting on base. And when he plays consistently, he finds himself in the heart of the lineup. He's hitting like third, fourth, fifth, right around that area. So there is some bad news, unfortunately. His playing time is bound to take a sizable hit now that Evan Longoria, Brandon Belt, and in the deep favorite, Lamont Wade Jr. all just came back off the IL or from like short injury stints. So that's really unfortunate. And he's probably just going to be used as a regular pinch hitter on most days. That said, it's worth monitoring the situation to see if anyone gets hurt, because it will lead to Darren Ruff getting consistent at-bats, and he's going to hit against lefties and righties. The nice thing, especially in your on-base percentage leagues, is that Ruff, even though he is not the best hitter righty on righty, he does walk a whole bunch against right-handed pitching. So you're still going to be fine there in your on-base percentage leagues. But yeah, keep an eye on him in your daily leagues that have, in your deep leagues that have daily moves. And he's particularly juicy against left-handed pitching if you do need batting average.
Yeah, he's sat the last two games, which I'm mildly concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's not a bad hitter against righties.
Yeah, but he's also been so good over the past week and a half or so that I don't know why they wouldn't want to get him in there and get him at bats, even if it's going to be at an occasional DH spot, right? Because I think Longoria is still going to be playing third, right?
Yeah.
Now that he's back and healthy, so he should be on the field, not taking up that DH spot. I don't know who's been in the DH spot the past couple days. But I'm definitely interested in having Lamont Wade Jr. I have Lamont Wade on the brain.
It's been Jock Peterson against righties, which makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That does make sense. They just have so many good platoon bats on
yeah.
the team.
But it's because, just goofy. Like, along with the players you mentioned, Lamont Wade, Longoria, and Brandon Belt, Mike Yastrzemski came off the IL about a week ago.
True.
So, really, just a flood of potential competition. Well, not like actual competition for mm-hmm. playing time all at the same time, yeah. which is a bummer. Really,
I think that the bat is way too good to just leave him out of the lineup, though, right? Like, it's got to, like...
Oh, he got, I mean, he got plate appearances last year. I think he will again this year. I believe my hope slash prediction when I talked about him in the offseason was that he would get 450 because of the DH. And all of those injuries, I think, probably made that a lock.
Yeah, I think that also plus the fact that I think we talked about Darren Ruff before Jock Peterson signed with the Giants.
You're probably right.
That sounds right, at least. I mean, it was very close, I think, but I think we talked about Darren Ruff before Jock Peterson signed with the Giants, and I think that obviously shifted the landscape a little bit.
Yeah. Although
Darren Ruff was like pinch hitter extraordinaire.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what he did.
There were so many like late season role player signings that like messed up our offseason episodes so much.
Of course they did. It's an ever changing landscape. It's just going to be, I mean, we're going to be wrong just because of stuff like that we can't control so much, and it's really hard. But I mean, regardless, Darren Ruff's still really, really great. And I hope that he gets enough opportunity to be super valuable for folks, including Schwebsey. Hopefully he can get you a couple more stolen bases, maybe.
That's why I got him.
But. Yeah. All right. that's it for our deep dives this week. Let's move on to, we're going to do a little section we're going to call graduation ceremony, which is players that we've talked about in previous weeks who are now outside of the 20% or less threshold that we usually talk about players in. Shrubsy, let's start with Josh Naylor. Take it away.
Josh Naylor, he's doing the thing.
He's doing the dang thing.
He's doing the thing where, you know, we talked at length about how if we were Josh Naylor, we would simply hit the ball in the air, and he is simply hitting the ball in the air to great effect. And I the purpose of this section is it feels a little like backpat-y, but the point of this is to point like this, they're both more shallow league relevant.
Yes.
And also, if you are in a deep league and they're still out there, you know, we've talked about them before and we don't want you to forget about them if they do happen to still be out there. But, you know, Josh Naylor and fellow Cleveland Guardian Andrés Giménez. Giménez is going to fall apart at some point. He's got like a crazy high inflated BABIP right now, but he's flashed a little bit of power, a little bit of speed. Historically, he has ran like crazy whenever he had an opportunity. That hasn't shown up so much this year. He's only got a couple of stolen bags, and he hasn't shown the same willingness as before. But I have to assume that that's coaching. I have the feeling that if the opportunity presents itself, he will go back to his old ways. I just can't imagine that stolen base willingness has just disappeared on its own.
Is Miles Straw still stealing bases?
Not like he was in the first 2 weeks now.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what to deal with that is. Because I figured that, I mean, Cleveland probably is. I was assuming at the beginning of the year that they would be leading the league in stolen bases.
Yeah, I would have bought that in a second if I knew Giménez was going to get playing time, yeah.
Yeah.
But
anyways.
So this other one we bring up for one reason and one reason only. Raddy Tellez is now rostered in 69% of Yahoo and ESPN leagues.
Nice. We love Rowdy. We love our big beefy boys hitting ball far, hit ball hard, make ball go far. Yes.
And in a similar vein, Jorge Mateo hit his second home run of the year today, which puts him at 2 home runs and 9 stolen bases for the year, while also putting up an above league average batting average. I had
absolutely serviceable.
He's basically what you were hoping you would get out of Adalberto Mondesi.
Yeah, genuinely.
Yeah, he's at 20% now. I still firmly believe he should be rostered in every single roto league. Maybe not so much head to head leagues, but anything. Yeah, anything roto, he should be rostered in. So the stolen bases are too valuable, and he's not a complete zero. You know, across the board to you know make him not rostered. And he's at 20% right now, so I expect him to join those graduates in not too long. We're going to do our usual thing where we talk about some honorable mentions real quick, but there's one that we really particularly want to draw your attention to. Like, this is like number one with a bullet.
Yes.
And that is Edwin Rios of the Dodgers. And the reason we want to bring him to your attention is because he has played for 3 straight games. He has DH'd for 3 straight games. And Edwin Rios is that kind of player where it's like the second he gets everyday playing time, he is an immediate must add for, you know, anything deeper than a standard league, maybe even in a standard league. Because this is a guy with just prodigious power. This is like a Eugenio Suarez type bat. You know, maybe not quite that many dingers, but yeah, it's that similar type of production. So, yeah, as if the Dodgers are going to keep playing him every day, and he's, like I said, he's got 3 starts in a row, Rios demands being added. I'm like literally the first thing I'm going, because I noticed that he started 3 games in a row as we were prepping for this podcast. The first thing I'm going to do once we're done recording is go check what leagues he's available in for me.
Absolutely. So he's over 3 with 2 strikeouts so far today. That said, I mean, he had what, two home runs, three runs, seven RBIs in the past four games combined, including his 0-for-3 day today. That's pretty good. I mean, the Dodgers offense is going to be fantastic most days regardless, just because it's absolutely stacked. If he finds himself anywhere in the heart of that lineup, he's going to be absolutely killer.
Oh, you know, completely unrelated.
Oh boy.
There was a really quick bit that I wanted to do while I was talking about Tyler Wells that I forgot to do. Like, you know how
we can
like,
circle back.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'm doing it. I'm not letting this go.
I don't need your permission.
Yeah, I mean, it's very common knowledge for our listeners now that one of our favorite archetypes of players is the big boy that hit the ball far.
Yes, correct.
That's why we like O'Neill Cruz. That's why we like, you know, our
Rowdy.
Rowdy, our Vogelbach. Yeah, our barrel guys. Tyler Wells is a large boy that throws ball hard. Do you know how tall Tyler Wells is?
6'5".
He's like 6'8".
Is he really? Dang.
He's a big boy. So I think that we're going to need to add that to the in the deep lexicon, as a close cousin to the big boy hit ball far. It's the big boy pitch ball hard.
We can do that. That's acceptable. That's not even a bit. That's just on brand for us. I think.
Accept your terms.
All right, so we talked about Edwin Rios. I want to bring up Mike Moustakas really quick. I mentioned him briefly in the preseason corner infield preview as someone to target if he managed to stay healthy, and so far he's been mostly healthy. And the Reds' offense has been not a steaming pile over the past few weeks, including like a huge series against the Brewers, which was really unfortunate for me as a Brewers fan. But Moose is hitting like 350 over the past 2 weeks and has 8 runs and 6 RBIs. I don't think that he's necessarily like a must add, but he's definitely a fine stopgap filler if you have an injury and you need to stream someone, especially against right-handed pitching.
I dig it. I actually have a very similar player.
Go. Do tell.
With a little more versatility involved. So actually a contributor to my being a stolen base savant in TGFBI, apparently.
This is dumb. This was an accident.
This is so dumb. I fully intended to cut Brad Miller from my TGFBI squad like 2 weeks ago, but then I forgot to do Fab. So Brad Miller, it's just how baseball goes. Players ebb and flow. They have their highs and lows.
Yeah, of course.
Brad Miller started the season on a low, but he's such a fringe player. A lot of the guys we talk about are. That when he has a low, you kind of want to cut bait, and then it's very easy to miss the highs, kind of like I talked about with Tyler Wells earlier, where, you know, I cut him after one bad start and missed the highs. Brad Miller's on a high, guys. He's hit 3 home runs in the last week or so, maybe 10 days. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he's also stolen a couple bags this year. I think that might be more of a Darren Ruff thing, where it's just be thankful if you were a recipient of those stolen bases, but don't target it. But I know I've talked about Brad Miller on this podcast before. He's similar to Mike Moustakas in that he is a fantastic hitter against righties, just got off to a rough start. I actually need to check the lineup tracker real quick, because at the start of the season Miller was hitting leadoff against righties.
Yep.
Which is a really, really enviable lineup spot. And he's still doing that. He appears to be in a straight platoon now, because he has sat 5 straight games versus lefties, and the Rangers have faced a lot of lefties lately. But for those in daily leagues, Brad Miller could be, or you DFS players out there, Brad Miller is a name to keep an eye on for when they're facing righties.
Love that one. Yeah, I mean, kind of with the stolen base stuff, it's just kind of a what's the best way to say this?
A meme.
Don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened. Sort of thing. Just be thankful that you had it when it happened.
Hey, Brad Miller has a career high of 13 stolen bases. It was 2015, but don't tell me you can't do it.
He can't do it.
He can't do it.
He can't do it.
He has already matched his last season's total.
Yeah. So a lot of mine that I put down here for honorable mentions were actually more of like, well, at least a couple of them are more cautionary tales, like please steer clear of these people and don't fall for the trap, more so than it is, I want to highlight this person because I think you should pick them up. One of them is Vince Velasquez. I think he's had some really good innings lately for the South Side of Chicago. But this feels like a trap. We all know that we all know who Vince Velasquez is at this point. I don't think there's really much that has changed with Vince. At least nothing that I could glean. So I'm probably going to steer clear of him, even though he's had a couple good starts over the past few weeks. And also Johnny Cueto is going to be back soon. Vince is probably going to be the odd man out. So
I'm with you there. There is not a thing you could do to make me roster Vince Velasquez in a league of any depth.
If he was a left fielder all the time, then I would do that, maybe.
If he was a left fielder and like assists were a category.
There you go. Bingo. Exactly. The other one that I was going to do is Jose Quintana. What's going on?
You're completely out on this, huh? You don't buy the Quintana sauce?
So he's following like the Blake Snell blueprint, which is really encouraging. He's elevating his fastballs. His curveball and his changeup have both been like okay. The curveball is the thing that I think that really hinges on, honestly. His curveball was his best pitch this year so far. If that's not working, I don't know if I necessarily really want him in any of my lineups. It scares me otherwise. Yeah, I don't know. I just don't think it's there for me.
It feels like Pittsburgh is starting to do good things with their pitchers. Like we've heard that they have overhauled their player development, so similar to like the Orioles we talked about before. Although I think the Pirates are behind where the Orioles are. We're seeing some good stuff out of Brubaker. We've seen good stuff out of Keller. Seeing good things out of Quintana. I'm not going to act on it, but I'm keeping my eye on this.
Yeah.
Like Pittsburgh might be, you know, starting to do some good things with their pitcher development.
Yeah.
Although they couldn't do anything with Chad Kuhl and the Rockies could. So I feel like that's a damning indictment.
That is fair. Yeah, I don't know. There's some other people that I listed here that I think that are kind of in the similar vein that includes like Martin Perez, Nick Pivetta. I think that there's definitely some good sides to Nick Pivetta. His last start wasn't too bad, but it still feels so uncertain to me, and I don't know if I want to take the chance unless it's an incredibly favorable matchup. On the other hand, I also have Reed Detmers here. And as it turns out, I don't know if you know the Schwebzy, but no hitters are those are good.
Who has two thumbs had Reed Detmers on his TGFBI bench for his no hitter and is doing a visual gag on an audio medium?
Schwebzy is. Yeah. Schwebzy did. Oh my gosh. I'm sorry. I mean, I'm trying to think if I had anyone on my bench for like a really excellent pitching performance this year so far. And I don't think so. I've been on Nestor Cortez the entire year, so I was able to nab both of his 11 strikeout performances. Or no, he had 12 in that one, didn't he?
I think it was 11. I want you to know that I was workshopping a Mike Francesa caller about Nestor Cortez bit, and I scrapped it in my own head, so you're welcome for that.
Thank you for self-censoring. I appreciate that. That way I don't have to edit it out of the podcast later.
Lucky for you, Nestor Cortez is rostered in more than 20% of leagues.
Fair enough. Now he is. But, Trubsy, any other bats you wanted to talk about? Colin Moran you have down here.
Yeah, Colin Moran's doing that thing that he does once or twice per year where he just has a crazy hot week.
Yep, against the Brewers, no less. Thanks, Colin Moran. You jerk.
I mean, if you're you know, an astute listener, then you remember a couple weeks back when I told you that Brandon Drury has like one or two good games a year, and you already missed it after he hit his first home run of the year. And then Drury went and hit a bunch more home runs over the next few weeks. And I kind of have egg on my face from that. So I don't want to say too many mean things about Colin Moran because he's in a good ballpark. And he's got all the opportunity in the world and he's crazy hot right now. So if you're desperate for a corner infielder, Colin Moran might be your guy. And in a similar vein with opportunity, with plenty of playing time ahead of him, Travis Demeritt, who I also talked said mean things about, continues to do pretty well. Hit an absolute missile yesterday for a dinger, and he the strikeouts are the issue with him. But as long as he's hitting a home run every now and then in between all the strikeouts, like he's a worthwhile fantasy asset.
I can dig it. Awkward pauses.
I opened my mouth like I was about to say something and then cut myself off, and Jordan was waiting for me to say the thing that I was going to say.
I'm like, bruh, go. Do it.
I wanna.
We literally have the finish line in sight, and both of us are just like literally crawling on our hands and knees.
I was going to say a dumb thing, but then I remembered I've already hit my quota for dumb things to say today, and
it's not hard for us, especially when we hang out together. Again, one brain cell passed back and forth between us. But, was there anyone else you wanted to cover? Or is that it?
Seth Brown hit a dinger today, and he has prodigious power. He has the power to get the ball over the fence, even with the beanbag baseball that we're dealing with right now. So this could be the start of a run. I think Brown is one of the Athletics worth rostering. Laureano's return makes it a slightly stronger lineup, although Laureano's return also makes playing time a little bit harder to come by. So we have to monitor if that is going who that is going to hurt specifically. I know Chad Pinder didn't play today, which wounds me personally. But I still like Seth Brown, and he's still rostered nowhere. He's had a rough start to his year, but similar to Brad Miller, I think there's going to be a week in the near future where Seth Brown hits three or four dingers and everyone wants to roster him immediately. But yeah.
Cool. All right. I think that was it for me too. I don't think I have anyone else. Wait, did I talk about Austin Gomber yet?
No,
I didn't talk about Austin Gomber yet. I think that, Gomber's had two quality starts in his last three games. God, I couldn't figure out how to say that. And he always seems to be like kind of pesky. He has like decent CSW numbers, but doesn't strike a ton of people out and gets a lot of ground balls and weak contact. Just keep an eye out for favorable streams with him. I think that he's a really good streamer throughout the year. I feel like I always get him on my teams 2 to 3 times a year for different streams, and he usually does a pretty decent job for me. And unlike last year, he's no longer like an enigma who was amazing in cores, but just awful outside of it. That is somewhat normalized this year. I was genuinely waiting for him to be like insanely good at cores again this year, and then for some reason, just inexplicably bad elsewhere.
Normalize getting gombered.
Yeah, normalize getting gombered.
You know, I do have one more name I want to bring up.
Do it. Go for it.
This is for degenerates like myself.
Ooh, I love degenerates.
I'm in an AL-only league with two catchers. Both of my starting catchers are hurt. So I'm on my third and fourth string AL only catchers, which, as you can imagine, is not an enviable position to be in. Christian Betancourt on the Athletics, their backup catcher, has been low key tearing the cover off the ball.
It's true, he has.
Look, if you're in desperate need of a catcher play, I practice what I preach. He is actually, I picked him up 2 days ago to replace Mitch Garver, and it has paid immediate dividends because he hit pretty well the last two games he played. He actually played first base yesterday and has played three of the last four games now. So it looks like Oakland might be recognizing that he is tearing the cover off the ball. But peep those barrel rates. The man is like really hitting the heck out of the ball right now.
Love it. All right. I think that's it for this week's episode of In the Deep. Thank you all so much for joining us once again. As a reminder, if you'd like to follow us on our social media profiles, we have Twitter accounts. You can follow us at our shared podcast account at In the Deep PL. You can follow myself, Jordan White, at Bunt Singles, and you can also follow Schwebzy at Schwebzy. That's Schwebsi. And on that note, we'll talk to you again next week. Schwebzy, send them out.
Bye, friends.